We're speaking now with Cornell Razor, and he is the Republican candidate for District 1, House of Representatives, Seat B. And Cornell, I'm going to say thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, here's the starting question for all the candidates. Tell us more about yourself. An introduction to voters who may not know you. Tell a bit about your background, how long you've lived here, how you wound up here, and some of your experience and qualifications.
Well, I've been here since early grade school. My parents moved here in 1969. From Nevada, and I grew up on a cattle ranch, and I've logged, and I've worked in the mills, and I took over the Army Surplus Store in 1981, and I've been there, whatever that works out to in the math, 42, 43 That's, years, yeah. So I've owned it for several years. I went to high school here, I went to grade school here, I attended North Idaho College and the University of Idaho. My original desire was to become a veterinarian, since I did enough of that free on the ranch when I was growing up. But I got married, and I've been married 48 years this year. We have three kids and 16 grandkids, and they all live in the area. So that's a real blessing.
That's nice, yeah. That's lucky, man.
Yeah, it's really encouraging, really a delight. And so that's kind of my backstory, and I've been involved in political issues since probably the early 80s, but more in a more robust way in the 90s and on. I've written a little bit of legislation. I've testified in the House, things like that. So I'm kind of getting off topic here.
Well, that's important to know your experience, because you are also a former county commissioner.
Former county commissioner. I was a commissioner for 4 years, and spent quite a bit of time, spent a little bit of time in the legislature, because I was the commissioner that was on the health district board. And so I helped formulate and secure their budgets for several years at JFAC meetings down in the 2010, 2011, and I believe 2012. I'd have to look at the years. It's been a while. Yeah, but 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, but several years ago.
Yeah.
Several years worth of that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I think one of the things you're going to ask me is what qualifications I have. Well, some of them, one of the things I'm going to try to do is to help out in the area of making sure that legislation doesn't inadvertently step on county government. One of the things that I discovered when I was a county commissioner was often legislators would pass legislation that was something of an unfunded mandate at the county level, and we would have to find out ways to implement and pay for it, much to our taxpayers' dismay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to be something of a go-to and a buffer and an information guy on that, since I understand a bit of how county government works. Mm-hmm. So
any nonprofit or trade professional associations that you're involved in, you mentioned?
Not really. No, I've always kind of been myself person. I've never really belonged to too many agencies or groups or I'm trying to think if there's anything. I mean, I helped start the local pro-life group, but that was 30 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. And then I've been involved in teaching, teaching Constitution to young people. And I go around and try to help other groups learn how to navigate public office and properly use Robert's rules and such in their meetings and things. But I'm not really any membership. I don't have any membership in any groups right now.
Okay. Well, here's the question I ask all the candidates, and you've heard it 10 times, I'm sure, or more. Why are you running?
Well, the seat came open, and I believe I have something left to offer still. I've got some knowledge of political machinery and how to work at the state legislature, and I believe I've had a lot of people ask me to run. I've had some legislators ask me to run, and so those are parts of the reason. Plus, now that I got moved back into my district, I've never moved, but I've been in three different districts in the last 30 years
because of redistricting.
Yeah, because of population change. So we were in one, then we were in two, then we were in seven. Now we're back to one. And seven and two were different than they are now. So it's an interesting thing. I know you know how it works.
Yeah.
But so I just feel I have something left to offer. I would like to be able to be useful and work on continue to bring some sanity to the budgets at the state, which it looks like some of that was accomplished this year. And just some other legislation. I have some ideas on funding schools that I don't think have been tried yet, which we'll see how that works out. But
Well, I want to ask you a bit more about that, but one question I want to squeeze in here. So the legislature typically is in session from January through at least March. This year, it just ended last week in April. So you're really only, you know, in session for 3 to 4 months, but if elected, you're representing constituents year-round. It raises the question, if elected, how much time will you devote to your office?
I will devote as much time as is necessary. I have an employee, I have employees, I'm in a position where I can do that. When I was a county commissioner, I put in 65 hours a week. And that was, of course, you got more money, but that had nothing to do with it. I was already making a living. So I plan on devoting whatever time is necessary. And I have watched the better legislators in the off season. Generally, you can figure between 15 and 20 hours a week you might be involved in constituent work and helping people and watching, dealing with, especially if some of them are on JFAC. And so that cuts into their time. There's other committee work that will be going on. So I will dedicate whatever time is necessary.
Okay. Well, what do you consider the biggest issues in this race you would be particularly interested in moving forward and that you think the voters should be considering?
Well, some of the continuing issues are just the border issues, the illegal border issues, illegals coming into the country and improperly dealing with that. As I've discovered in speaking with some of our legal immigrants that live here that have talked to me about this, this is a great concern to them. They put the time in to come in properly, and then they see people cutting across the border, basically swimming the river and becoming beneficiaries of the largesse of the United States. Now, what can Idaho do? Well, we can join with other states. I think our governor did that this year in kind of a sort of like a memorandum of understanding with Texas. So those are some of the things that we can do. I think some good laws.
I think we sent some Idaho
We sent some Idaho State Patrol.
Down there, yeah.
And I think other things, one of the better bills that passed this year was refusing to allow legals to have access to welfare benefits other than emergency care. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to run them off from the hospital if they need emergency care. But so that won't make it less of a draw to come to Idaho. So that's one of the issues, the border issues. The issue of finances, I'd like to see us be able to move forward on some better sound money bills, or not better, but some sound money bills, I should say. There seems to be a lot of misunderstanding of that, a lot of unfounded fear, so those kinds of things. And then protecting our children, the library bill that you said you mentioned earlier, that library bill I think is a good step in the right direction. We're not interested in banning books, just in putting them in their proper location.
Okay, so, and that's one that I mentioned before we got into
Yeah, you did. I jumped ahead. I apologize.
Yeah, and that was House Bill 710, which allows children or their parents to sue librarians for damages or up to $250 if after they provide 60 days written notice to the library, asking them to move a harmful book to the adult-only section. And that was approved by both the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. and the governor signed it. And that's one that, had you been in the legislature, you would have supported.
I would have supported it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, keep going. I didn't want to jump off the track
No, that's okay. Actually, that's pretty much it. That's just kind of what I hope to do and why I'm running.
Well, so when you say sound money bills, you're talking about, I know there are a lot of constituents here that are unhappy about the property tax burden. Do you see a role for the legislature to play in property tax relief?
I do. And it has to do with various and sundry issues that, unfortunately, Chris, I'd like to keep close to my vest right now because I have to do further research. I've learned that it's not a good idea to proffer something only to find out that it's impossible. If I'm going to tilt at a windmill, it's going to be a running windmill, mm-hmm. if you understand what mm-hmm. I mean. Mm-hmm. So, but one of the things would be if we had a sounder basis for our money, the money would stop devaluing so badly. I think most people in Idaho understand what inflation is. It's not an increase. It's not a increase in prices. It's a devaluation in the buying power of the existing money in circulation because of inflation of the money supply against no commodities being introduced into the the market at the time. Mm-hmm. So, and there was a sound money bill that was, I think, failed this year, that had some pretty good earmarks. I would be looking at resurrecting something like that.
I don't have the details on it, but I know there was a bill that came up that was looking to see the state invest in gold.
Well, no, what it was is it was providing, so it was allowing the secretary to invest some of the funds in gold and silver mm-hmm. as a hedge against inflation. Mm-hmm. Not all, mm-hmm. but just some. It just provided one more type of investment mm-hmm. to the state.
I don't think that one passed.
It did not pass.
But would you have supported
it? I haven't looked at, I looked at the text of it and it looked good to me, so mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's jump to a few of the other bills that came up. You know, there were, as you mentioned, I think earlier when we were talking, I think you mentioned there were over 300 bills.
Yes.
So I wouldn't expect anybody to know all those bills. I certainly don't myself. But one of the ones that came up was House Bill 521 that Governor Brad Little signed. It was approved by both houses. It's legislation under which Idaho will spend an additional $1.5 billion over the next decade to help fund building construction maintenance for schools all around the state. And my question would be, would you have supported that or opposed that one?
Well, it's one that I'm not familiar with. It's something that I could picture myself supporting, assuming that it appropriately addressed the proper maintenance issues around the state. As you may know, when you look at legislation, you have to compare it with other legislation. You have to compare it with existing legislation, existing statute. So I hate speaking off the top of my head, and I don't know enough about that bill mm-hmm. to be able to effectively answer it as a yes or a no. And that's not politically dancing around it. I would be giving you a false impression. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's another one that has to do with schools, but also concerns firearms. And that's a concealed guns in schools bill. It's called House Bill 415, which would have allowed public school employees with concealed weapons permits to bring concealed weapons onto school grounds. The House passed this bill, but it didn't make it out of the state, the Senate's State Affairs Committee. And I don't know if you're familiar with that one or would have opposed or
marginally
supported
familiar. I would have supported it. Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a bill that that would have kind of a trailer bill on that one, which would have impose some training requirements for these employees to bring these these guns. Would you be in favor of that?
Training is always good, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would say, though, in northern Idaho, and you may know this, but at any given time, wherever you are, there are probably more than half the people around you
are already
packing, yeah. And we have no issues.
Yeah.
Because the average American is very careful about that. They're not, I mean, it's not like we have crazies mm-hmm. walking around us. There's a few, but for it's very safe.
The concerns about this particular bill I heard was that the possibility that kids could get their hands mm-hmm. on firearms if a teacher is careless, say, with a firearm that's in his possession or in his desk or something. So anyways, it didn't pass. It might come forward
again. It might come forward again, right, yeah, in some form.
There was a House bill concerning the initiative process. It's House Bill 652. It would create a public review period for signatures submitted for initiative petitions. And it would allow more time for voters to change their mind about signing a petition. So essentially, there'd be a 60-day period in which a petition must be turned in if it had voter signatures to the Secretary of State to be verified, and it passed the House, did not progress out of the Senate again, and I think the argument against that one was that it's already an arduous process to get all these signatures and to only have 60 days to get them turned in would have really made it much more difficult to do an initiative. How would you have gone on that one?
I don't know enough about it, but okay. What little I know about it, I think I probably would have supported it, but I'd like to look more deeply into it before I could give you a firm answer on that. But that way you got an answer from me rather than dancing around. So.
Okay. Well, that leads into another question. So there is an initiative that's underway right now. It's the Open Primaries Initiative. And it would end Idaho's closed Republican primary so that all voters, regardless of their party affiliation could vote in the primary election. It would also allow voters to rank candidates in order of preference. So there'd be ranked choice voting.
It's ranked choice voting is what it would introduce.
Yeah. The groups that are organizing this initiative are collecting signatures to get it on the ballot. If successful, voters will get to vote either for it or against it in November. What's your take on the Open Primaries Initiative?
I would be voting against it. I mean, I'm not in the legislature. When I vote in November as a citizen, I will vote against it, yes.
Well, expand on that.
So in any given situation, we don't want people on the other team picking our pitcher. I'm trying to keep this as simple as possible.
Right.
That's basically what
it has to do with parties.
Has to do with parties.
Yeah.
And then the second aspect of it is creating a list of four where a person, there's no such thing anymore as one man, one vote. It's one man, four votes, three votes, two votes, five votes. That's the ranked choice. And essentially it puts you in the position of maybe having to put a number beside a person that you wouldn't ever vote for in the first place. And a couple of states, especially Alaska, are trying to get away from it. They've seen what it's done to them, and it's not something that someone who believes in one man, one vote would be for, in my opinion. So I would be voting against it as a constituent.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the initiative, I mean, it's constitutionally guaranteed to Idahoans that we
the
have
initiative
an initiative
process.
In mm-hmm. referendum. But what level of difficulty should be imposed? Don't make it too easy to get initiative out there. Otherwise, you have, you know, a ton of frivolous things coming up. So there has to be a pretty good measure that people can must pass in order to get something on the ballot before voters. What's your general take on initiatives? Do you like them?
I believe we live in what is known as a constitutional republic, and the founders got moved away from democracy. This is basically instituting democracy again. So I believe if we're going to have it and it's in the Constitution in Idaho, then we need to make it as arduous as possible, because it makes it very difficult for the legislature, especially to attach a funding bill to something that the citizens petition and then come up with. The legislature is then tasked with implementing that into statute, or actually becomes statute, implementing it. And that makes it very difficult on the legislature. There's often a funding section that is never attended to properly. Bills should be debated arduously and regularly and forcefully and by both houses. And that is originally how the founders intended for this to be. Constitutionally, a constitutional republic, and the only democracy that still exists is the election process. So when we get away from that, we're going to end up with the kinds of things that have happened in California and Colorado, places where that have the initiative process, and Florida, where it's for many, many years. I mean, the Florida Constitution, I can't remember how many pages it is, but it's partially because of the initiative process. They implemented into the Florida Constitution something about pigs. I can't remember. When I heard it, I thought it was a joke, but it was true, and it was an initiative. Had to do with something. I'd have to look it up. I don't want to. If I'm gonna spout something out, I want it at least to be accurate. But it had to do with pigs, and it's in the state constitution of Florida, and it's part of the initiative process. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the level of difficulty right now is to get an initiative on the ballot is 18 of 35 legislative districts have to have at least 6%.
So half plus one.
Yeah. A population that say, yeah, let's put it on the ballot. And then it's not approved because it still goes before all the voters in the state on the ballot
mm-hmm.
As well. Do you think it's that's an appropriate level? It's pretty arduous, as I understand, because there's only, I think, been two successful initiative drives in the last 10 years, and a number have tried.
I don't know. I've never been involved in the initiative process as a citizen, so I've never navigated it, so I don't know how difficult that would be. But it sounds difficult, so I can't give you a straight answer on that, Chris. It would be presumptuous of me, since I've never done it.
Okay, well, we are getting close to our time, but here's one more.
Okay.
It's Senate Bill 1374. That was proposed by our District 1 Senator Scott Herndon. It blocks lessees of public property from banning concealed weapons unless they are renting the property for, quote, a private event by invitation only, or for a commercial event that charges admission. This one passed both houses, and it was signed by Governor Little. Would you have favored or opposed that one?
I would have favored it.
And expand on that one a little.
Well, just because it's another step in the direction of preventing government from stripping us of our right to self-defense. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could answer it in 14 paragraphs, but that sentence will do, I think.
Okay. Well, let's see. Are there any other specific issues you want to bring up? We have a couple minutes. I got a couple of the closing questions here for you.
Just that I'll make myself available to the constituents, as I mentioned, year-round. And I'm creating a list, if I make it into the legislature. I've got a list going of constituent-driven requests for looking into particular legislation. So if anybody has anything like that, they're sure welcome to forward it to me, and I'm going to give my contact information.
Yeah. So a couple closing questions. Politics have gotten more polarizing, mm-hmm. and I think almost everybody would agree about that. Do you see ways to find common ground among your constituents and how would you go about representing constituents that might have different ideas or viewpoints?
So my worldview is such that I believe that everybody's rights have to be protected, even if they disagree with me vehemently. I'm going to make certain that your right to disagree with me and be vocal about that, your speech, your protection of your privacy, those are all going to be secured as much as I can possibly work in that direction. So I've always been one who's approachable. I have quite a few friends who were not on the same political page, but we've learned to discuss things. We've learned to let things lie when we couldn't come to a mutual compromise, but we could still be friends. But I will most certainly listen to everyone's side. When I was a county commissioner, we did that, especially when we had the Caribou issue. We spent 2 years hearing both sides. Actually, there were more than two sides. There were three sides of that issue. I don't know if you remember it, but it was when they were going to put 376,000 acres of critical habitat in northern Bonner and central and northern Boundary County. And I had multiple discussions on the record and off the record as an individual. So I'm willing to listen to everyone's perspective and treat them with respect, treat them with dignity. I agree. Social media, I believe, has been one of the gasolines that has fueled this lack of civic, of decorum. Mm-hmm. We say things with a keyboard that we would never say to our neighbor's face.
Yeah, I totally.
And we
totally
need to get back
there.
To that.
Yeah. Well, last words here. How can people, weighing how they are going to vote, find out more about you?
Sure. I have a website. It's my name, Cornell with one L, cornellforidaho.com. And my email is my name, cornellrazor@hotmail.com, or on the website, there's an email there. And if you are so inclined, there's a donate page. I can always use the money it's unfortunate that politics has gotten so expensive, but it has, so.
Well, Cornell Razor, candidate for Idaho House Seat B here in District 1, thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you for the time, Chris. I always appreciate talking with you.